I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA One, The Hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are especially written for people learning English. These are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Today, Alice Bryant and John Russell teach us a memory trick. Then, Brian Lin tells us about Malaysian farmers using different ways to grow a type of fruit. I will return with this week's words and their stories. We will finish our 30 minutes together with our series on national parks in the United States. Today, Jonathan Evans and Ashley Thompson tell us about the Grand Canyon. But first, the education report.
Sherlock Holmes is an imaginary private detective created by British writer Arthur Conan Doyle in the late 1880s. Doyle's stories about the detective have been turned into movies and television shows. One of Sherlock Holmes' great skills is a powerful memory. In a recent BBC television series, the character uses a memory technique called a mind palace or memory palace. On one show, for example, Holmes has been severely wounded in a shooting and retreats into his mind to search for ways to survive. He visits rooms in his mind palace looking for helpful memories. In one room, he finds his childhood dog, and the memory helps calm the detective. The memory palace idea was not a BBC creation. The method for remembering has existed for thousands of years. Many language educators today teach their students how to use the method to improve their language skills. But what exactly is a memory palace? It is a real structure, such as a home or building, that you can picture in your head. You then imagine placing things you want to remember inside the structure. You can use a memory palace to remember words, phrases, facts, or even the order of events. If you can see the inside of a house or building in your mind, you can make your own memory palace. On today's education tips, we will show you how. Start with a list of words or phrases that you want to remember. Then close your eyes and choose a physical space that you know well, such as your home, a school you attended, or a current or former workplace. If your chosen space has only one or two rooms, do not worry. You can also use things like doors, passageways, steps, or other permanent places along the physical path. The next step is to imagine walking through the space using the path that you would normally take through it. As you walk through, put objects that you want to remember at specific places along the path. Leave the objects there to pick up later when you visit your memory palace. Now, let's try this technique by using 6 ingredients for a pizza: flour, water, dry yeast, tomato sauce, cheese, and basil. Close your eyes and picture a home. First, you open the front door and see a bag of flour on the floor. The bag is broken and some of the flour has spilled. You are worried that you might slip, so you carefully step over the area. Second, you walk into your bedroom. On top of your bed sits a cup of water. The cup is shaped like an upside-down piece of pizza. You think about how funny that is and laugh about it. Third, as you enter the living room, you see a very large spoon of dry yeast sitting on the sofa. The spoon is watching a cooking show on television. Fourth, while standing in the living room, you notice the room has a strange smell to it. You look above the television and see a block of cheese hanging on the wall. Fifth, you walk into the kitchen and see two tomatoes chasing each other around the room. Suddenly, they crash and explode, covering the floor in red. And sixth, you open the back door and go outside. There, you see a group of very tall green basil plants. In a funny voice, the tallest plant says, "Choose me! Choose me!"
Did you notice anything strange about the palace? It was full of extraordinary and humorous imagery. We will say more about that in a few minutes. But first, let's check how well our technique worked. See if you can answer these questions. 1. What was on the wall above the television? 2. Where were the tomatoes and what were they doing? 3. Which object was sitting on the bed? 4. Where was the yeast and what was it doing? 5. Which ingredient spoke and what did it say? 6. What did you see when you opened the front door? My guess is that you remembered everything in our memory palace. That's good news. Experts offer some advice for making strong memory palaces. For instance, if you want to remember a lot of words, memory trainer Anthony Metivier suggests first drawing a simple map of your memory palace. Then, number the places along your path where you will put the things that you want to remember. You can put more than one thing in each room or area. Later, you will add the mental imagery. English teacher James, of the YouTube channel James ESL English Lessons, has additional advice. In his video on memory palaces, he says that there are three keys to a strong memory palace. They are emotion, movement, and connections between the object and something permanent. Both he and Metivier say imagining things in a humorous or crazy way improves your ability to remember them. These experts also agree that connecting images to actions or movement will create lasting memories. Now it's your turn. Pick a list of English words or phrases that you have trouble remembering and try this method on your own. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Alice Bryant. Thank you.
And now, let's hear from Brian Lin.
A Malaysian farm says it has perfected its methods to successfully grow Japanese muskmelons, one of the world's costliest fruits. Farmers at Malaysia's Mono Premium Melon Company said they had discovered the right mix of nutrients and treatments to grow the top quality melons. One of the methods involves workers rubbing the melons with a soft cloth. The farmers believe that doing this can improve the taste of the fruit. They also play classical music around the plants, which is thought to increase growth. Sei Cheng Xiang is the director and co-founder of the farm in Putrajaya, south of Kuala Lumpur. Every single Japanese melon that you see in our farm is almost like an art piece, Sei told Reuters news agency. Since the last century, farmers in Japan have been perfecting the art of growing the fruit. Japanese muskmelons are prized for their tastiness and exact rounded shape. In Japan, the costly melons are sold in high-end stores as luxury products. The farmers said they aim to grow melons with the same level of quality as those sold in Japan. But the process is more difficult in Malaysia because of the country's hot and humid climate. Japan enjoys more moderate climate conditions than Malaysia. We have to make sure that nutrition, the watering and the fertilizer are done very consistently and precisely, Sei said. He added that his company had tried growing more than 10 kinds of Japanese melon before settling on the right one. The Malaysian farmers get their seeds from Japan and also travel to Japanese farms to learn the correct growing methods. The farmers say they had to do a lot of experimentation to find out exactly which ingredients provided the best nutrition to the muskmelon plants. The company's efforts have been successful so far. The farmers reported that the first crop of 200 selected muskmelons had quickly sold out. Most of the sales happened online. The melons are sold for 186 ringgit each, which is about 40 U.S. dollars. That price is about one-third lower than what muskmelons sell for in Japan. Elaine Chow attended a recent sales event at the company's farm and said she was very pleased to find the local muskmelons. It's pretty interesting to know that as a Malaysian, we can actually grow Japanese-grade melons in Malaysia, she said. I'm Brian Lin.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in American English. For half the planet, it is springtime. That means warmer temperatures and new growth on plants and trees. Trees are amazing and do so much for our environment. The basic parts of a tree are the trunk, the roots, branches, and limbs. Today we are going to talk about limbs. If you like watching squirrels play in trees as much as I do, you may have noticed something. They jump from one limb to another. They are fearless even as they walk out on the weakest looking limb. They are simply not afraid. And that is our expression for today, to go out on a limb. When you go out on a limb, you take a risk. You take a chance. You are brave by doing something that could hurt you. You know when you climb out onto a tree limb, you could fall and get hurt. But here's the thing with this expression. More often than not, the risk is an emotional, social, or political one. It is usually not a physical risk, like the ones our squirrel friends take. It means you put yourself out there and open yourself up to criticism or judgment. Here's an example. Let's say I have a friend, Jake. Well, Jake just lost his job, and he is really upset about it. However, he has a plan. He plans to go to his ex-boss's office, unannounced, and explain all the reasons why she should give him another chance. I know this is a terrible idea. But Jake does not want my suggestions. In fact, he gets very upset when I warn him. So I say to Jake, "Look, this might upset you, but I'm going to go out on a limb. I think it's a really bad idea to visit your ex-boss at her office. Really bad. Why don't you just call instead? A call is better, and a call won't get you arrested for trespassing." Here is another way to use it. Let's say I put in a good word for Jake with my boss. This means I speak highly of him. As a result, he ends up getting a job interview. I really went out on a limb for Jake. I know he's not that great of a worker, but he promised to do better. Still, my relationship with my boss is on the line. This means it is at risk of being damaged. I went out on a limb for Jake. I really hope I don't regret it. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. I'm going to go out on a limb myself and say that VOA Learning English is the best place for you to reach your English learning goals. This is a risky thing to say. One, I don't know your English learning goals. And two, there are a lot of other English teaching shows out there. But I really wanted to finish this show with another example for you. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Our National Parks journey continues with one of the most popular and beautiful places in America, Grand Canyon National Park in the state of Arizona. The Grand Canyon is one of the seven natural wonders of the world and one of the largest canyons on Earth. It stretches for 450 kilometers. Parts of the canyon are more than 30 kilometers wide and 1 kilometer deep. Many writers have tried to describe the wonder of the Grand Canyon. They use words like mysterious, overpowering, and strange. But it is not possible to put human meaning to such a place. The Grand Canyon truly is beyond words.
this your first time at the Grand Canyon?
Yes.
And what do you think? Do you have a few words to describe it?
Beautiful. Amazing.
What do you think of the Grand Canyon?
Oh, very huge and very colorful.
Do you have some words to describe what you're seeing?
Amazing. It's so amazing when I see it at the first look.
The canyons of America's Southwest are deep, ancient openings in the earth. They look as if they formed as the earth split apart. In reality, rivers formed these canyons. 40 million years ago, the Colorado River began cutting through the area around the present-day Grand Canyon. The river carried dirt and pieces of stone that slowly ate away at the surrounding rock. It left a pathway of enormous rock openings. At the same time, forces deep within the earth pushed up the surrounding land. Rain, snow, ice, wind, and plant roots rubbed away at the top of this new canyon. Below, the river continued to uncover more and more levels of ancient rock. Some of the exposed rocks along the Grand Canyon's walls are nearly 2 billion years old. They are among the oldest rocks on Earth, with many levels of granite, schist, limestone, and sandstone.
The Grand Canyon measures 2,500 meters from the canyon floor to its highest point. Because of its size, the weather at the top of the canyon is often much different from the bottom. On some winter days, for example, you may find cold winds and snow at the top. But at the bottom of the canyon, you may find warm winds and flowers. The Grand Canyon is home to some 2,000 plant species. Some of these species can only be found in the park. The park is also home to more than 370 species of birds, 90 kinds of mammals, and 40 kinds of reptiles. Many of the birds spend their whole lives in the Grand Canyon. Other species depend on the Grand Canyon for food and shelter during large migrations. The Grand Canyon was named a globally important bird area in 2014 because of the role it plays in protecting many species of birds.
Native Americans occupied the Grand Canyon 3,000 years ago. Bones, hair, feathers, and the remains of plants have been found in deep, dry caves high in the rock walls. The Hopi, Paiute, Navajo, and other Native American tribes have all been in the area for at least 700 years. In 1869, American John Wesley Powell explored the Grand Canyon. He recorded much of what we know today about the area. Powell and his group traveled in 4 boats along the Colorado River. He and his group of explorers knew very little about getting over the fast, rocky waters of the Colorado River. In many places, boats could be turned over by giant waves. Soon after they started their journey, Powell's group lost some of its food and equipment. 3 members decided to leave the group. As they walked up and out of the Grand Canyon, they were killed by Native Americans. The rest of Powell's group survived the journey. Starved and tired, Powell and his group reached the end of the canyon. They had traveled by boat down the Colorado for more than 3 months. John Wesley Powell's reports and maps from the trip greatly increased interest in the Grand Canyon. But visitors did not begin to go there in large numbers until 1901. That year, a railway was built that reached the area.
Five million people visit the Grand Canyon every year. The first sight of the canyon can leave visitors speechless. Depending on the time of day, the sun lights up the rock walls in red, orange, and golden colors. The bright colors are the result of minerals in the rock. Their appearance changes endlessly with the light, the time of year, and the weather. At sunset, the canyon walls display fiery red and gold hues. Then they take on softer colors of blue, purple, and green. Most visitors walk along paths part way down the canyon. It takes several hours to walk to the bottom and even longer to climb back up. Some visitors choose to ride mules to the bottom of the canyon. Mules are strong, sturdy animals that look similar to horses. Visitors can also explore the Grand Canyon in other ways. Hundreds of thousands of people see the canyon by air each year. They pay a helicopter or airplane pilot to fly them above and around the canyon. Thousands of people every year choose to explore the Grand Canyon by boat from the Colorado River. These trips last 1 to 3 weeks.
Most people who come to the Grand Canyon National Park visit an area known as the South Rim. That area has shuttle buses that take visitors to overlooks. Fewer people see the canyon from the North Rim. The North Rim is less than 20 kilometers across the canyon from the South Rim, but visitors must drive more than 350 kilometers by car from the South Rim to access the North Rim. Visitors can also see the Grand Canyon from a huge glass walkway called the Skywalk. The Skywalk is on the Hualapai Indian Reservation in the western part of the canyon. The Hualapai Indians built it to increase tourism at the reservation. It opened in 2007. The Skywalk extends more than 20 meters from the canyon's rim. It is suspended more than 1,200 meters above the bottom of the canyon and is shaped like a giant horseshoe. Many call the Skywalk an engineering wonder, but others have criticized the Skywalk and its development. They say it reduces the enjoyment of nature in the Grand Canyon. For visitors hoping to get a view of the entire Grand Canyon, they will have to travel well beyond the state of Arizona. The only place to see the entire canyon at once is from outer space. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Jonathan Evans.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.